Support for WPR comes from The Alliance, committed to being an objective partner for over 425 employers and their brokers, providing self-funded employers with data to manage their health plans. The-Alliance.org. Support for WPR comes from Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, a community where students are invited to learn actively, lead courageously, and live purposefully for a lifetime of impact. More about Luther College at luther.edu.
Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, February the 20th. And the question we'll ask you this hour is, do you think the Federal Food and Drug Administration should have the authority to regulate the manufacturing and marketing of tobacco products? Such bills have been introduced and debated in Congress in the past and have gotten nowhere. But with the new Democratic majorities in the House and the Senate, supporters of this bill believe they will finally see a tobacco regulation bill like the one that was reintroduced late last week pass into law. The bill is sponsored in the Senate by Senator Edward Kennedy, a Democrat, and Senator John Cornyn, a Republican. In the House, the bill is sponsored by Republican Representative Tom Davis and Democratic Representative Henry Waxman. It would give the FDA the authority to regulate things like the nicotine levels and other ingredients in cigarettes. It would mean larger warning labels on cigarettes. It could prohibit tobacco giveaways. It could prohibit the manufacture of fruit or candy-flavored cigarettes, and more. We wonder, do you think this is needed? Or do you think cigarettes are regulated enough? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Should the FDA have the authority to regulate the manufacturing and marketing of tobacco products? Our guest is Gerald Thain. He is an emeritus professor of law at UW-Madison. He specializes in tobacco and consumer law. He has studied the impact of litigation on tobacco control. He has written numerous articles on advertising and trade regulation and related issues. And he was co-author of the marketing and promotion section of the 1998 report of the Surgeon General on Smoking and Health. Good morning.
Good morning.
So give us a very, very brief history lesson here. Why doesn't the FDA already regulate tobacco products?
Very briefly, the FDA took a position for almost 90 years that it did not have the authority because tobacco was not a drug and tobacco products were not drug delivery devices, and they had authority only over drugs and drug delivery devices. They changed that position when David Kessler was the head of the FDA in the 1990s. And attempted to regulate tobacco, and they lost that in a Supreme Court decision by a 5-4 vote, which said that the Congress had not given it the authority to regulate tobacco, only the authority to ban drugs.
And Congress says, well, at least some in Congress have been trying to give the FDA that authority, but why hasn't that happened?
Well, there are a number of reasons. One is that some people oppose it simply because they're opposed to regulation in general. Other people oppose it because they come from states where tobacco is significant in their economy, and they feel that this will hurt their state economically.
Yeah, and now as Ted Kennedy is quoted as saying, what a difference a year makes. 2007 is the year this legislation will finally become law. You think so?
Well, I think there's certainly a better chance now than there was in the past. I'm not in the business of forecasting, but it's certainly better.
Yeah. So what exactly would this legislation do?
A lot of things. Essentially, it would regenerate the FDA's effort to regulate the product in the mid-90s, and that includes such things as limiting youth access and marketing, banning all outdoor tobacco advertising within 1,000 feet of schools and playgrounds, banning free giveaways of any non-tobacco products, prohibiting these flavored cigarettes, which the industry has come out with recently that presumably are quite appealing to children, ones that have names like Koala, ones that have names like Koala Colada, Twist the Lime, Midnight Berry, alcoholic flavored cigarettes, things like screwdriver slots, and so on. And also, it would allow the FDA, among many other things, to regulate the amount of nicotine that is in tobacco, particularly in cigarettes, which has not been able to do in the past, and cigarette companies have been able to vary the amount of nicotine.
Yeah. In fact, recently in the news, there was some, I don't know if it was a litigation, but it was the cigarette makers were chastised or even cited for calling their cigarettes lights or ultralights, saying that that they're no healthier than regular cigarettes.
Yes, there have been, depending on the product, there have been some actions by the FTC, by other authorities, claiming that this is false and misleading advertising, because either they are not significantly lighter, or they're not in any meaningful sense of the term light. The concern is that people will take this to mean that they are more healthy. This happened back in the 1960s when the filtered cigarettes came out and were widely thought to be more healthy by the populace, although, in fact, in some respects, they were less healthy because many users smoked them in such a way as to block the filtering and increase the amount of nicotine they were receiving.
We are talking with Gerald Thane. He's an emeritus professor of law at UW-Madison, who specializes in tobacco and consumer law, talking about a new bill in Congress. It was just reintroduced late last week that would give the FDA, the Federal Food and Drug Administration, the authority to regulate tobacco, to regulate the manufacture, sales, and marketing of tobacco products. Is this a good idea? What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. And we'll talk with Professor Thane after this weather break about why the country's biggest cigarette manufacturer actually favors this legislation. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 17 minutes past 6 o'clock, coming up after 7 o'clock, we're going to talk about whether or not we need an airline passenger bill of rights. Talk about the problems, especially for the airline company JetBlue last week and continuing into this week. And whether or not we need an airline passenger's bill of rights, coming up in our next hour. In this hour, we're talking about a new bill in Congress that would regulate tobacco marketing and manufacturing and the sales of tobacco products. Wondering if we indeed need to give the FDA this authority. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. Our guest is Gerald Thane. He's an emeritus professor of law at UW-Madison. He was co-author of the marketing and promotion section of the 1998 report of the Surgeon General's report on smoking and health. Professor Thane, what exactly did that 1998 report say?
Basically, it indicated that although there had been a significant drop in the percentage of people who smoked, people roughly over the age of 12 or 13 who smoked in the U.S. from 50% in 1946 to less than 25% in the mid-1990s, there remained a very significant percentage of youngsters who smoked, and indeed during that decade, the number of minors who smoked actually rose slightly after dropping for the decades before that. And one of the reasons for that was a response to various kinds of promotion and advertising of cigarette companies that appealed to youth.
Yeah. Is that because of Joe Camel?
Joe Camel was certainly a major factor in it. That was R.J. Reynolds' cartoon character, which has since disappeared in the wake of litigation and the master settlement agreement between the tobacco companies and the state's attorney generals. But there were other product efforts as well. The fact that the magazines, for example, have a high percentage of teenage readership, have a tremendous amount of cigarette advertising in them, and you see a lot of it at the various kinds of sporting events.
Yeah. Speaking of R.J. Reynolds, I mentioned that I was going to ask you about why in the world would this big cigarette maker support legislation that would regulate it more?
It's not R.J. Reynolds. It's the Philip Morris makers who support the legislature. But the question is understandable. When the cigarette companies reversed direction and conceded because of the scientific evidence in the 1990s that smoking was an addiction and not just a habit and that nicotine was an addictive substance, Philip Morris, which has the largest segment of the market, about 50% actually of all its brands, urged not too many years after that that there be a regulation of the FDA because they felt it was inevitable and they hoped if they supported it, it would be less onerous. And also, at least in the eyes of their competitors like R.J. Reynolds, because Philip Morris, as the market leader, would be in the best position if regulation were to occur. That is to say, it would be very difficult for any other cigarette company to overcome or significantly cut into their lead in the market.
Yeah, so let me I apologize for getting those two mixed up.
No problem.
Philip Morris is the biggest cigarette maker, and they support the legislation, and it's R.J. Reynolds, the number two maker, which is opposed.
It's probably just technically more accurate to say Philip Morris supports regulation, whether they support exactly this legislation or not in terms of its precise terms. It might be subject to some question. They certainly are on record for some years already as supporting regulation of the industry by the FDA.
And in part that they might be able to influence what the regulations are if they're in support of it, and also that they are number one, so this would hurt number two more than number one.
Oh, that's certainly what the non-number ones think in the latter part. Also, I believe it's probably true, although this is less clear, Philip Morris may believe that if you have clear-cut regulations from FDA, it may in the long run be more difficult for individual smokers to prevail in any lawsuits against the company because they can say after that they're following a government rule.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the Joe Camel ads and that controversy.
Yes.
I think a lot of people are under the impression that tobacco companies can't market like this to children anymore.
Well, certainly a number of these kinds of devices were prohibited in the master settlement agreement between the companies and the attorneys general, and Joe Camel specifically was the subject of that settlement. But there are many other things that tobacco companies can do that will appeal to children, and it should be noted that every day 6,000 minors smoke their first cigarette, and about 2,000 of those become addicted. So it's a significant problem, especially because according to the Center for Disease Control, the number of premature deaths, because everyone dies eventually, but the number of premature deaths that are attributed directly to tobacco approach 450,000 a year. That's more deaths than are due to AIDS, other drug addiction, alcohol, auto accidents, homicides, suicides, and fires, including fires caused by cigarettes, combined.
Yeah, what kind of marketing or advertising done by cigarette companies is encouraging these 6,000 young people to smoke their first cigarette?
Displaying cigarettes and other tobacco products in what might be called cool settings, rodeos, sporting events, having people who would appear to be what one might call role models for youthful individuals, smoking the products, displaying them at, as I mentioned before, sporting events, and giving away products with just a few cigarettes in a pack. That's something else that would be attacked by the legislation because these freebies will usually attract people who are not smokers or haven't really taken up smoking. Many years ago when I was a college student, you went through the lines in the dormitories, you would have the cigarette company representatives at the end of the line passing out these free sample cigarettes for that reason.
Yeah.
Also, another thing the legislation would do would be to try to limit vending machines and self-service displays of cigarettes, which can be purchased in that fashion, to be limited to adult-only facilities.
Yeah, I know that I've seen, like, I don't know, maybe watching a tennis match or something, all of a sudden a big billboard on the side of the wall that says Marlboro.
Yes.
That's still legal to do that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and why can't Congress just pass a law saying you can't do that?
Well, that's one of the things that's included in this provision. They not to quite to that degree. The question in terms of why can't they? It would be to what degree would it eventually be held if it were challenged to be an interference with the limited free speech rights of commercial speech that marketers have, and I think that it's highly unlikely you'd get Congress to. A majority of Congress to agree on a total prohibition of all promotion for cigarette products, although it's conceivable that might be held to be legal.
Yeah. I remember doing a program a while back on, I'm trying to remember who it was. There was various advocacy groups that were trying to convince Hollywood producers to not have characters in Hollywood films, the good guys and gals, smoking cigarettes.
Yes. Yeah, there was a study that was done, I think it may have been by Public Citizen in conjunction with the Association of Tobacco-Free Kids, or title of something like that. I know Tobacco-Free Kids is in the name. I saw that study a little over a year and a half ago. Of course, that's what you call, as you said, advocacy, but certainly there have been many studies which indicate that seeing people who are considered as the phrase would have it, cool, in quotes, by youngsters, does influence a not insignificant number of them to decide that it would look cool for them to smoke.
Yeah. And of course, it was a long time ago when cigarette advertising was banned from television.
Yes.
Who did that?
That was done by Congress.
Mm-hmm.
That was done by Congress, and that was upheld by the courts, although the Supreme Court itself never reviewed it, and the decision occurred prior to the determination that there was some First Amendment protection for commercial speech. Interestingly enough, in that particular situation, the cigarette companies, although they were not overt about it at the time, was later discovered, actually supported that legislation. The reason was that the so-called fairness doctrine, which no longer exists, but then required that any time there was a controversial issue of public importance that was discussed on the licensed airways, there had to be some time given to the other viewpoint. And that led to eventually their being required to have one anti-smoking commercial for approximately every six cigarette commercials that were on radio or television. And the view of most cigarette companies and anti-tobacco advocates both was that the anti-smoking commercials were actually becoming more effective than the smoking commercials. And by prohibiting advertising of cigarettes on radio and television, that meant there was no requirement that you have anti-smoking materials. You can put them on as public service messages,
yeah,
but there's no legal requirement.
Interesting. So. Let me bring in a caller before our news break, Chad in Milwaukee. Hi, Chad.
Hello. Professor Thane, I was wondering if there's anything in the works for the military. When I was in, they would actually, I was in the Gulf War, and for the smokers, the government would hand out cigarettes in wartime situations to the people that were, cigarette smokers.
Yeah, that's been going on since World War One, right?
Yeah, my dad was smoking in World War II because of that to some extent. But, Chad, are you saying that maybe there should be a ban on that?
No, I'm just saying in one hand they're supporting it, and on the other hand they're not. So it's kind of...
Yeah. Oh, yes. So, well, of course, this has been true for many years. The government has subsidized in many ways the growing of tobacco by tobacco farmers and has engaged in other acts along that line. Blackjack Pershing in World War One claimed that cigarettes were more important to the troops than bullets, which is probably an overstatement.
Now, let me hold you there, Professor Thane. We have a news break coming up from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking with Gerald Thane, Emeritus Professor of Law at UW-Madison, about this new bill in Congress to have the FDA regulate tobacco. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Tuesday, February the 20th. Should Congress give the Food and Drug Administration the authority to restrict tobacco manufacturing, sales, and marketing? A bill to do this was reintroduced in Congress last week, and supporters are predicting victory.
The president of the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids calls this legislation the most important public health bill this Congress will consider this year. The bill would, among other things, give the FDA the authority to regulate how cigarettes are marketed, especially to children. No more tobacco giveaways, no more fruit or candy-flavored cigarettes. Restrictions, presumably, on advertising cigarettes at sporting events or other things that could appeal to children. But it's not just children that this is targeted at. It would prohibit the use of words such as mild or light in tobacco advertising. Tobacco products would probably have to carry larger warnings if the bill were passed. The FDA could mandate nicotine levels and ask that they be lowered in cigarettes. Do you want this legislation to pass? Why or why not? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. While supporters are predicting this will pass the new Congress, and others are saying it would be pretty hard for President Bush to veto such legislation, there will still be a fight. One of the senators from North Carolina, a tobacco state, has vowed to use any legislative tool at his disposal to block passage of this legislation. He said tobacco is already regulated enough. We are talking about the history of regulation of tobacco products and advertising of tobacco products, and talking about this legislation and what it might do with Gerald Thain. He is an emeritus professor of law at UW-Madison, specializes in tobacco and consumer law. He was co-author of the advertising and promotions section of the 1998 report of the Surgeon General's report on smoking and health. And again, we welcome your thoughts and questions for him about whether or not the FDA should have the power, the authority to regulate tobacco and tobacco manufacturing and marketing. This primarily, Professor Thain, in your experience, your take on this bill is that this would be good in terms of discouraging young people from picking up the habit?
Yes, I think it would have a significant impact. Certainly the FDA, David Kessler, who was both a lawyer and a physician when he was running the FDA, had that belief, and there were a number of studies which would indicate that was probably the case.
Yeah, and why is that so important to discourage kids from lighting up?
Well, first, because of the health consequences. I mentioned before there were 450,000 almost, according to the Center for Disease Control, premature deaths attributed to the use of tobacco in this country. In Wisconsin alone, the health care cost, not that lives are not more important than the cost of care, but health care cost is over $2 billion. And only $480 million of that's covered by Medicare. And the statistics are that the tax burden that's caused each household in Wisconsin due to the health consequences of smoking is $603.
Yeah, and it's true that smokers today generally picked up this habit when they were when they were kids and not when they were adults.
That's always been the case. There have been studies going back to before 1950, which indicate that the number of people who are smokers do almost none start at the age when it's now legal to smoke. It's almost impossible to find anyone who's a smoker who started smoking at the age of 23, and the number of people who started smoking at the age of 21 is also very small. That presents an interesting situation for the tobacco companies because in order to avoid having a precipitous decline over the years in terms of their smokers, they've got to get people starting to smoke before it's actually legal to have them do so, or encourage them to do so, or have them smoke cigarettes.
Any evidence or research, Professor Thain, as to the good these labels do on these health warning labels do on cigarette packs?
Yes, there's been a lot of research on that, including some by people in Wisconsin. What happens is if you have the same label over a period of time, there's a certain amount of cognitive dissonance, which means people are aware of it, but disassociated from them, among people who are smokers. And the impact tends to dull over a period of time, which is the reason that you now see the rotating warnings on the packages. And it's also been demonstrated that having more colorful, more prominent displays of warnings and larger ones have some impact, too.
Yeah, I saw a report not too long ago about how other countries, Canada and Europe, have huge labels on their cigarette packs about how dangerous this is, including, I think, one of them showed, you know, pictures of gum disease and really awful things.
Yes, they have that in Canada, and they have very strong warning labels in terms of cigarettes will kill you in Australia.
Yeah, and does that encourage adults to quit?
Some, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, it is an addiction. I mean, medically demonstrated to be an addiction to nicotine that causes people to take up and continue to smoke. And the reason that there's such a high percentage of people who smoke who want to stop and find it extremely difficult unless they go to something like the smoking cessation programs that Michael Fiore runs here at Wisconsin.
Yeah. So if this legislation passes, it's possible we would see different, bigger, uglier warnings on cigarette packs here?
Part of the legislation would include that, exactly.
Well, we have a number of callers. Let me bring some in. Brad in La Crosse. Hi, Brad.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment. I'm personally a non-smoker, find it pretty disgusting to do. However, I'm 44 years old. My parents grew up smoking quite heavily, and I've seen all the ads that they did on TV when I was a child, and was not influenced by it. And to now say that government needs to put more laws to make people non-smokers, I think it's too much government, and I'm not sure it's effective, and makes society more of a too much governed by the law. I think the responsibility really needs to be put on the people and the parents. Government never ask the parents to be more responsible with their children. It's always what can the government do for us, not what can we do for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. You have a comment on that, Professor Thain?
Several. One, I congratulate him for not smoking. It's the best thing you can do in terms of your health, as insurance companies will tell you. Secondly, you're not in a small minority, but you are in something of a minority, because the more that you're exposed to smoking when the household you grow up in, the more likely you are to smoke statistically. We're talking about millions of people here, so obviously there are many exceptions to that, but that is certainly the case. Also, one thing that hasn't been mentioned at all this morning is the problems of secondhand smoke, which means that a number of people become sick with diseases related to smoking because of their exposure to smoking by others. And that's a significant concern. So if a person wants to be responsible and they decide that they're going to smoke or become addicted, they have to be concerned about what they cause for others.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Brad. I will go next to Judy in Grace Lake, Illinois. Hi, Judy.
Hello. I've got to say, it's about time they're talking about this. If the FDA feels that it's within their rights to regulate herbal preparations, there was an herbal tea that I liked that they took off the shelves for 2 years because they didn't like what was in it. And then they finally put it back in, it had to be completely relabeled. And that's a helpful product that had no side effects. And something like this that impacts society to the extent it does. Both of my parents were chain smokers. They both died of complications of it. I have asthma because of the secondhand smoke that I grew up with. And to not see that regulated, to see something this addictive and this destructive just allowed to free reign where, you know, you can't go out and buy certain foods because the FDA doesn't like it, but they'll let this come over the counter, that's just absurd.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, if they're looking at the economic problem, well, what are all the tobacco farmers going to do? Start weaning them off and letting them be in the arena of, green fuels, like growing soybeans or the grasses that they're turning into alcohol, and move them into an area that's actually supporting our economy and something we can use.
Yeah, maybe that tea that you like, Judy. But she has a point, right, Professor?
Oh, absolutely. There's an interesting history on this. When the first list of drugs that could be regulated by the FDA, the so-called pharmacopoeia, came out in about and a preliminary list had nicotine on it, but the final list did not. And that's the reason that for 90 years the FDA took the position that it couldn't do anything about regulating tobacco products because tobacco is not a drug and its principal addictive ingredient, nicotine, was not considered a drug. And therefore, cigarettes and other tobacco products are not drug delivery devices. That meant that for virtually all of our history, tobacco essentially has been unregulated. There have been regulations and cases brought against the companies by individual smokers who were harmed, most of whom lost, but some won. And there have been regulations of the advertising by the Federal Trade Commission and, of course, congressional action on the advertising. Yeah. But they've essentially been an unregulated product.
Let me hold you there as we check our very nice weather forecast. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 12 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, February the 20th, Fat Tuesday and primary election day in Wisconsin. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up, we're going to talk about air travel today, the problems that some carriers are facing, and whether or not you're going to welcome a airline passengers' bill of rights. That's coming up after 7 o'clock. Right now, we're talking about a bill that was reintroduced in Congress late last week that would give the FDA the authority to regulate the manufacture, sales, and marketing of cigarettes, tobacco products. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions about this legislation and whether or not you think it's needed or not. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk at WPR.org. We have a couple of lines open for your questions and comments for our guest, Gerald Thane, Emeritus Professor of Law at UW-Madison. He specializes in tobacco and consumer law, has studied the impact of litigation on tobacco control, has written numerous articles on advertising and trade regulation and related issues. He was the co-author. He wrote the marketing and promotion section of the 1998 report of the Surgeon General on smoking and health. And our next caller is Aaron in Egg Harbor. Hi, Aaron, you're on the air.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm, go ahead.
I think that I have an idea, and I think that in lieu of the fact that the tobacco companies have been manipulating the addictive effects of this product unregulated for all these years and killing so many people, I think that if anybody... they should pass a law, and this law is a good one, but they should go a little further. This is my idea. If anyone who wants to quit smoking, the tobacco company they're addicted to should give them as many cigarettes as they want until they quit, which would give them an incentive to produce a addictive-free cigarette. And we should just outlaw the whole thing altogether eventually. That's my part of my.
I'm not sure I understand the give them free cigarettes. What is that? What's that going to accomplish?
Sure. Well, it would put the onus on the tobacco companies to develop a addictive free cigarette so that they could quit.
All right, Professor Thane.
That's an interesting idea. You mentioned in passing about the possibility of essentially, prohibiting cigarettes altogether. The general feeling on that, the overwhelming consensus in the legal community and in the in most of the medical community and the legislatures is that that would be counterproductive because that would lead to black marketing efforts and some of the problems that occurred when there's an effort to prohibit alcohol back in the teens and 20s of the 20th century.
Yeah. Any comment on whether this bill would somehow lead to more I don't know, a regulation of smoking in public places? We see sort of this, you know, community by community or state by state process. Would this have anything to do with that?
Not directly, mm-hmm. but I think it certainly would be something that might give an impetus to those kinds of efforts, because, among other things, the proposed bill is going to lead to more disclosure and comment about both the health costs and the financial costs of smoking, and also the fact that the population that is most affected, not the only population, but the population that's most affected by smoking health problems are essentially the poorer people by statistics in the population. So people who can least afford the problems of health are the ones who are most burdened with them as a result of smoking.
Yeah. We had a caller who couldn't wait, and it wasn't really related directly to our conversation, but I'll ask it anyway, since you just talked about people who really can't afford the health problems. Someone who's talking about the cigarette taxes. Why don't we just put, you know, tax these things until they're taxed out of business?
Well, certainly the idea that this, among the so-called sin taxes, is one that is popular and is something that may have some effect on that, is something that's being considered and heavily promoted right now, as you probably know, in many areas around the country. In terms of taxing them out of existence, most people would say you have the problem again. You're dealing with an addictive substance, and if people can't get what they're addicted to by one means, they'll get them by another. At least some of them will. Mm-hmm. So you have the problems of black marketing and having an illegal trade spring up. At least that's what many people are concerned about.
Let's go next to Jay in Wausau. Hi, Jay.
Hi. Good morning, Professor Thane. A couple years back, I was a student in one of your classes. Enjoyed it very much.
Well, thank you very much. Good morning.
Morning. I was curious, with the FDA in general, their regulation of pharmaceutical drugs specifically, seems like quite often you have a sort of fox in the hen house type situation. And if you given the authority to the FDA to regulate tobacco, do you run the same risk you find with pharmaceutical products where advertising on television for prescription medications is not regulated effectively? You know, in the long run, does this really go too far when the FDA so often comes up short in its regulatory role?
Well, that's certainly a very perceptive question. I think there are a couple of answers to that. First, the situation you see today with what you quite properly say is the not sufficiently regulated realm of prescription drug advertising is something that occurred only within a little over the last decade when people at the FDA in one of these anti-regulatory phases decided that you should allow advertising to consumers and not just to physicians of prescription drug products, and secondly, you can't control the quantity of nicotine in cigarettes except by regulation. So in other words, first, it's not just enough to have the regulation; you have to have competent and dedicated regulators, and you have to have proper oversight of them. But if you don't have the regulation, you really have nothing you can rely on for sanctions. That's a good point.
Thank you, Jay, for the call. Bob in La Crosse is with us now. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I'd like to take issue with your guest's position on not being able to ban cigarettes. It's well known that cigarettes are a public health menace. There are millions of people every year dying from the effects of smoking. And there's a lot of legal precedent for banning them. We've done it with asbestos, thimidylide, DDT, mercury, any number of chemicals in which has been proven that people die from them. And cigarettes are no different. It's just time for people to wake up and realize that this is a bad product. It kills people, and it's got to go. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Hello? Yes. One thing I want to be sure of, I didn't say that it would not, that it would be illegal to prohibit them. I think that it would be within the power of government to prohibit tobacco products if they wanted to do that. I think it's highly unlikely for a long, long time to come. because of the concern that if you prohibit something that is addictive to people, they will take a lot of measures, including some violent ones in some instances, to get that product because they need to get their fix. And that's the concern of many people. It's not that it would not be legal to do that. I should note that the substances that were mentioned, mercury, asbestos, and so forth, none of those were products that were addictive to people, although they certainly had deadly consequences. And tobacco is the number one killer in the U.S. I'm not saying it would be illegal to prohibit. I'm saying that it would be a difficult policy to enforce.
You know, I, at the risk of irritating some of our listeners, I've had a lot of experience with quitting smoking. Let me put it that way. Nicotine is not deadly. It's the other stuff. Isn't that right?
Nicotine is what makes it addictive.
Yeah.
Another thing about cigarettes is that, in terms of being unregulated, at present there's no requirement for disclosure of the various things that are in cigarettes, and a single cigarette has, it's estimated by chemists, to have about 4,000 toxic chemicals that include arsenic, formaldehyde, ammonia, and so on.
You know, we have another caller. We don't have time, only a minute. Does this also, this would also regulate a cigar and pipe tobacco and all that?
Yes. Cigarettes are by far the most deadly of the products, but these other tobacco products do create similar problems. There would be similar legislation, yes.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Gerald Thain, Emeritus Professor of Law at UW-Madison, who was co-author of the Marketing and Promotions section of the 1998 report of the Surgeon General on Smoking and Health, talking with us about a bill reintroduced in Congress late last week that would give the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, the authority to regulate the manufacturing, sales, and marketing of tobacco products. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour. Thanks to Karen Prager for on-air production. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.